live from the Findlay Toyota Studios. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Five o'clock hours here, Cofield and Company. Adam Candy is the company. Good spot there by Matt Jacob to close out the 4 o'clock hour. I'll just mention one more time, Candy seemed very irked by it, but I love these future odds. First overall pick in the 2025 NFL draft, because we are just minutes away from finishing up 2024. Deion's kid, Shador, at Colorado is plus 250. Carson Beck is 4-1. Quinn Ewers is 5-1. A lot of quarterbacks in this mix. I will say I heard on a couple of shows that, well, you know, the desperation, Candy, to take all these quarterbacks, and as it turned out, Penix went way above his over-under, which was set at 32.5. He goes number 8. Well, the desperation for quarterbacks is because next year's class just is not thought of very highly. Like, again, let's relax. Let everyone play next year in college. Let's see what the development is going to be. Guys emerge from sort of nowhere sometimes to become the top quarterback that following year in the eyes of the draft Knicks.
If we did not watch Bo Nix go to the Pac-12 and we were evaluating Bo Nix based on his time at Auburn, Bo Nix would not have been drafted in the first round. But he went and played well at Oregon. We had a different opinion, or some of us had a different opinion of Bo Nix. If J.J. McCarthy had not won the national championship with Michigan, we wouldn't be having this discussion about J.J. McCarthy. If all we ever saw of Michael Penix was him blowing out his knee at Indiana, then we wouldn't be talking about Michael Penix getting drafted where he is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We got to let this play out a little bit. Also, just to add one thing to that, the idea of six quarterbacks being taken in the top 12, all us smart guys who want to talk about don't draft first round running backs, right? Don't reach for positions that aren't premium positions. We got to pick a side here, because guys like us are supposed to like six quarterbacks in the top 12, right? You keep taking swings until you get your guy. You don't settle for mediocrity at the position. So I don't have any problem with six quarterbacks going in the top 12. It's just that then you start to individually look at situations and say, was that the place for you to make that decision? And five out of six, you can say, sure, that was the place for you to do that, with the exception of Atlanta.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that guys change spots and their careers improved. They got healthier in the case of Penix. I wanted to hit a couple of portal notes, right? This whole transfer thing. One, again, I love portal season. There's two of them. College basketball, you can see who is in it to win it, who has money backing. UConn today got Aid Mahaney, who was at St. Mary's. Good player. He's going to have to get better on defense, although St. Mary's plays very good defense. Has to get a little bit stronger, too. He landed at UConn, so you know UConn's in it to win it. They've got a budget. You know, every year they're going to have a new two-guard, apparently, who's going to be their designated shooter, or even more than that. This last year they had Cam Spencer, did a good job for him, so now it's Aid Mahaney. Also, you can tell at schools where the NIL backers have their coaches back and other places where they don't, right? The NIL people at Kentucky, oh, they want to win. Since they moved off of Coach Cal, they want to win. And Mark Pope has money. And I think Mark Pope's done a really good job putting together his team so far. Interesting that Arizona State, kind of out of nowhere, is back as a player. And this may be the backers saying, Bobby, we're going to give you the money. We're going to let you spend it. You're going to build a team, but we want results. Because they just got the highest recruit they've ever gotten off of 14 and 18 season, which seems a little bit weird. So they got a big man who was committed to, I think it was Louisville, and they just got him in the fold. So you know that Arizona State's playing for it. They're going for it. They've got money behind this whole thing. You know, another interesting transfer, Candy, unless you had something on college basketball. Another interesting,
all yours, buddy.
Another interesting thing on the college football transfer portal front is, you remember what Jade Maiava was going to do? I don't think he did it by going to USC, but you remember what he was going to do at Georgia, basically? He was going there behind Carson Beck. This was going to be a year of being tutored, and maybe he plays, but it was, let me make some money, let me practice against high-level competition, and then I'm either at Georgia or I'm somewhere else. Georgia still have that plan in place. So there's a well-traveled kid named Jaden Rashada who actually got playing time at Arizona State after he had committed to first Florida, then Miami, then landed at Arizona State, got playing time there, and now he is going to Georgia as a transfer portal guy. He's not going to play. But I find this new development is kind of fascinating, too, that the biggest of the big boys are like, you know what? We want someone young with some experience that we can tutor as the quarterback of the future.
All right. So this is just a theoretical question that I'm going to throw out there to you as someone who grew up in roughly the same era as you did of college athletics. It's not that we always thought about players who spent 3 in college or 4 in football and 4 in basketball years at a program as the gold standard, right? We never thought about it, especially when declaring early became a thing. It wasn't a good thing to have been there as long as possible.
Right.
But is that going to exist anywhere anymore? Like, what will be considered long-term at a school? I'm not joking when I say it's a guy who spends 2 years at a school, yeah, because it's one of two things. If you're not good enough, you will be shown the door because someone else will be brought in to replace you.
Yep.
Or if you're too good, you're getting bought up by a bigger program. And if you're too good and you get bought up by a bigger program and then they find someone who's even better than you to buy, when you go over there, chances are you're going to be on the sell side come next year. And there's going to be some mid-major program who's looking for you. So how long? 2 years, the most we're ever going to see somebody be someplace?
I mean, you could get guys who are even developmental at mid-major and lower major who take until year 3 to explode. But then when they explode, they're gone. They're going to spend their final year.
Gone.
But it is the circle of life now in college basketball, right? The experienced teams or the teams with the highest expectations want to be old. I think most of them have made the adjustment. Kentucky did not, right? Calipari did not. He kept going for, you know, 6 freshmen, and that just was not working. I think most schools are going to go with the formula of, hey, we'll bring in a couple of freshmen, developmental, and we can train them, and hopefully they stay around. But that's even a risk now. You're essentially wasting your time just developing him to go laterally or down, so you may as well go into the portal and retool half your team. It's not comfortable, but I'll tell you this. You know who can deal with it? You know, I think he loves it. Another guy who's killed it in the portal because he had a JUCO background, and he's been all over the place. Now, sometimes he's all over the place because of his own doing, and that's Chris Beard. Killed it. But he's comfortable, yep, doing it. A lot of the other guys, they never had to lift a finger. You know what? Have the assistants go out, get us the 5 best freshmen, 4 best freshmen. Our guys are going to stay here for 3 and 4 years. And now, I mean, it's been incredible, like, to see Duke bring in the top class in the country, but then have, like, 5 veterans go, you know what, this isn't for me, and they move on. I mean, they had one kid, Mark Mitchell, who would probably compete for a national championship this year, get some scratch. He'd certainly be in the rotation mix for a lot of playing time. And he's like, nah, you know what? Missouri wants me. SEC winless Missouri wants me. I'm going to go there. Like, what? So everything's been turned on this year.
I want to go back to a point you just made that I hadn't really fully considered. And I think it's brilliant to talk about what's going on in Kentucky. Because how many coaches turned down Kentucky, yep, on the idea of, I don't want to follow Calipari? Their expectations are obviously crazy. I think what Mark Pope and those boosters have shown you is that that wasn't the case at all. They were done with him. They were done with Calipari. As much as Calipari was done with the expectations, those boosters were done with him. Because the way they've gone in behind Mark Pope shows that they're going to do everything they can to prove that it wasn't about Calipari. They're going to put every dollar and every resource behind making that program what they think it should be. Even if, who knows if they were right or they were wrong before. But Calipari certainly was frustrated that he didn't have the budget that he did, that others did when he was at Kentucky. So now he'll have that budget in Arkansas, and Kentucky will find that budget behind Mark Pope. It's fascinating.
And Pope, and I'm assuming this is part Pope's decision at Kentucky, but maybe more so the NIL backers' decision. They're going to try and get old, right? They brought in a kid, a center from Drexel, who's got, you know, years under his belt. He was the defensive player of the year in the CAA. I think Lamont Butler from San Diego State being added to Kentucky tells you everything you need to know, right? Because if you don't watch him and you see the numbers on paper, 9 points a game, 4.5 assists. You're like, oh, big deal. He is an entire defense by himself. And Mark Pope is along with this philosophy that, hey, we want to be old. We don't want to be developing five freshmen and have three of them dissatisfied and leave anyway. We're going to be old, and we're going to win with veterans.
Lamont Butler is going to cause so many problems for so many guards in the SEC. He's that good of a defender. Like, if you hadn't had the chance to really see it as much, I don't think, in the Mountain West, just because you didn't have as many great players for him to go against, that dude is an absolute monster on defense.
So on the basketball front, how satisfying was it for you to watch the Knicks and the Sixers and the makeup of the crowd and then Embiid's behavior? Much maligned Knicks fan, Adam Candy.
I might not even need to eat dinner tonight. I am still so full of Sixers tears from all of the crying from Joel Embiid. My stomach could not possibly hit. I'm kidding. I can take so much more of it. Give me all of it. You give me all of Joel Embiid crying about, yeah, it's disappointing that there were so many Knicks fans in Philadelphia. Oh, I thought this was supposed to be a good sports town. Well, they thought you were supposed to get out of the second round. So that's why they're selling their tickets right now. That's why they let us lowly, terrible Knicks fans take over your arena. And we did. We took over Philly. And we were rewarded by getting nearly 50 points from Jalen Brunson and a win. And it was fantastic. You know why? Because we get clowned on by everyone. This time, the Sixers fans and the Sixers were the clowns, especially Joel Embiid, who somehow didn't get kicked out of Game 3 for being on the ground, yanking a dude's leg down with two hands so hard that he left that game and he was out of Game 4. Oh, my God. You could... Pat's, Geno's, I don't care what cheesesteak you could serve me from Philadelphia. Nothing, none of it would taste as good as salty Joel Embiid tears sliding down the back of my throat.
Wow. It's a lot of pent-up frustration there. The salty tears. Okay. Mentions of the throat. All right. You're feeling good.
Sliding on down, buddy. They're sliding on down like cheese whiz wit.
Any more shots at Philly you'd like to take?
No, I have to stop there because the Eagles pretty much own the Giants right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I kind of have to know where my limits are.
That was kind of painful to watch, wasn't it? The Eagles, whose pass defense on the back end stunk. And then they land arguably two of the top five cornerbacks in the draft. Sorry, man.
Quinyon Mitchell and I mean, Cooper D is going to be an absolute Philly legend. Right, the only place that would have been better for him to land is New England for obvious reasons. But like that dude, along with Quinyon Mitchell, is going to make Philadelphia much better this year.
NBA right now, first game underway. Boston up comfortably 2-1 in the series. It's on the road in Miami, 39-27, 8 minutes left in the half there. Jared had a really good story today that he sent over. I got to give him credit on this one because this is absolutely from the idea or the annals of Cofieldism, I don't know what it is, but you see that they have what they feel is an energizer for their offense. They have a home run sausage.
I'm sorry, who? There's a what now?
They have a home run sausage. They have a packaged sausage that they will throw at each other in good times on offense. Yeah.
Okay, now there are other phallic things that exist in good times, like, you know, the trident in Seattle is, you know, it's got a little bit of that element to it, but a home run sausage?
Rocco Baldelli called it a large, tangy summer sausage.
Oh.
And then talked about its packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And then also brought up one of my first concerns, because I'm legendary when it comes to food and pushing the limits of survival on food. Like, at some point, the food goes bad. Here's a little Baldelli. I didn't mean to say it that way. Here's the manager of the Twins talking about the home run sausage.
It's bringing us a lot of hits and runs and stuff, so I'm all for it. It's a substantial packaged sausage that Jeffers has been carrying around in his bag and throwing at people when we score runs and hit homers. So slightly concerned that the package is going to open up, and the thing hasn't been refrigerated, and there's no doubt that when that thing opens up, whoever's touching it is in deep trouble. Like...
That is the manager of the Minnesota Twins talking about a large tangy sausage that is currently packaged, but will bust open at some point, and who knows what's in that packaging.
Did you notice the pause he took right after the word substantial? That's a man who knew exactly what he was doing.
Yep.
Rocco Baldelli was in on the joke. Don't you think when they get a sense that the sausage might potentially be going bad, that's when you throw it at the other dugout?
Yeah, right.
Right? Like you see a pitcher who's really going well, and you're like, hey, Jeffers, wing that thing at the mound right now. That dude's gonna be on the IL for 15.
So there you go. One of the first cool stories. There's been a lot of cool stories in Major League Baseball season. The home run sausage out of Minneapolis. More draft coming up in a couple of minutes, but I do want to get to one thing that Raj Goodell was saying on McAfee last week. This is inevitable. Find me the negatives here, because I can find a big one. The football schedule, the NFL schedule will eventually be this is their wish, the owner's wish and the commission's wish. 2 preseason games. 18 regular season games, the calendar extended by a week. Super Bowl Sunday will land on a 3-day weekend. Monday after the Super Bowl is the President's Day holiday. I know the end of that will get everyone all juiced up, right?
Yeah, of course it will.
Yes.
Of course it will. So, all right. 18 weeks.
Yeah.
Are we getting a second bye week? Because we're going to need that second bye week, because otherwise the players are going to fall apart.
Right.
And also... Was the COVID pandemic and the NFL being able to play on literally any day that it wanted, like, the worst thing that could have happened in terms of scheduling? And seeing the fact that we were willing to show up for games at any time, that we would change everything in our schedule. Tuesday afternoon, 3 o'clock, doesn't matter. I'm there, buddy. Sorry, boss. Gotta go. Yeah, that seems to me like the fact that they've now decided, you know, we're taking over Christmas Day. That one's ours. Sorry, NBA. I know you had a good run there, but Raj is about to bring his substantial package into the building.
That's one you can use forever, huh? At least for the rest of the show. The 2 preseason games to me are a disaster. Not a disaster, but it's not going to be good for the beginning of the season. The other thing is, and I guess it'll make it more wild. I guess the good organizations will have an advantage. Having just 2 preseason games does kind of cut down on developing the back end of your roster, choosing which players you're going to keep around and roll with, doesn't it? Like, how much evidence do you really have from practice and then limited time in preseason games, so that the younger guys kind of get screwed over a little bit, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know. I think what we've started to see is that coaches kind of came around to the whole idea of the uselessness of preseason games too, because they started putting all of their effort into joint practices.
Yep.
Right. Joint practices become the evaluation chance. Right. I mean, you don't see first stringers in those preseason games anymore. If anything's going to happen, they use the controlled environment of a joint practice to get the job done, where they used to have to use the preseason games. And in the end, really, does it hurt anyone? It doesn't hurt the season ticket holders who don't have to pay for preseason games, and if the coaches have already adjusted to it, I'm actually not too worried about that piece of it. I'm just worried that we schedule appropriately to make sure players get as much rest as is possible in season, so that we are not getting a diminished product by the time we're in week 16, 17, and 18.
Coming up, we'll get to some overall thoughts on the crazy draft weekend that just passed, and boy, oh boy, Sean Payton is a genius. Just ask him.
Pretty.
Now, back to Cofield and Company.
We have the group interview. Wait, they abandoned you. Oh, that's right. Oh, what are we? Why do we have to wait? I follow the group with these knuckleheads. I'm doing some investigating right now. I don't know what's happening.
Ellie, you know what? Let them have their confab. They're talking with their home TV, and that's good for them.
On ESPN, Las Vegas.
I like that. I like that a lot. To explain what was happening there, Candy, Allie LaForce with the network was trying to get an interview with some of the Minnesota T-Wolves, and they went over to local first. So a little personal satisfaction. Not. I don't think Harlan was mad about it or anything like that. I think Adam Candy's with us, but he might be muted.
Oh,
that happens sometimes.
No, and this is not a situation that I actually feel muted about. I generally support
he was cursing the whole time we were dumping him.
I generally support the idea of going to local media prior to going to network. However, about 10 years ago, I was at Summer League and I was doing some work, and I just kind of turned to my left and saw someone and just was kind of like standing eight count, just stunned.
Wow.
All I'm telling you is, if Allie LaForce wanted to interview me, it would be very difficult for me to turn to someone
wow.
else and then begin talking to them.
Look at Candy.
Just admitting it. Right out here in the open. Right out here in the open.
Ringing endorsement. I like it. I did not expect that at all. That's good.
I was shocked. I'm just saying today's players don't have the respect they obviously need to have.
Exactly. Exactly. Does Sean Payton have respect for anyone? He really comes
Drew
off
Brees
as a,
and
take, as, comes
look,
off as a
no,
horse's
Drew Brees,
ass sometimes.
No. There's one person that he loves more than anyone else. You think I'm going to say Sean Payton? You're wrong. It's Taysom Hill.
Yeah. Headline, Sean Payton suggested he baited the Vikings into trading up for J.J. McCarthy when Bo Nix was his guy the entire time. All right, Sean. Good for you. I thought Denver taking Bo Nix was just absurd. At 12, he's been panned across football. Trade down, bro. No one was taking him that high. If you think you can be a miracle worker, again, with another older quarterback, that's fine. You know what? Him taking Nix, I think I'm almost okay with it if he's planning on drafting the best available quarterback in every draft for like the next 4 years in the first round. Wherever he falls, just take him. And eventually we're going to hit. Because this makes very little sense.
I realize we talked earlier about the fact that players get better over time, that mm-hmm. some players will advance with age. Bo Nix didn't get better with age. He got better when you made the competition easier, right? Bo Nix was supposed to be the second coming when he first got to Auburn, and he wasn't the third or fourth coming. Like, he was none of those things. And he consistently failed in the SEC to stand out, and so good for him. He goes to Oregon, he remakes his name, and he fools Sean Payton into taking him with the number 12 overall pick. Now, good on Sean Payton for head faking the Vikings, I guess. Yeah. I don't understand what the idea is there.
Yeah, I don't either. Like, you didn't benefit from it. So you fooled another team to give up. Are the Vikings your direct competition? Oh, they gave up some draft capital. I got them. But you didn't get it.
You did not. Nope. Not even a little bit. But then again, this is the same guy who put out there through Adam Schefter during the draft that he felt the same way about Bo Nix that he felt about Patrick Mahomes when he was ready to take him.
Right.
One pick after the Kansas City Chiefs actually traded up to go get him. You felt so strongly about him that you let another team trade in front of you to get the guy that you really wanted. Like, what is it that Sean Payton is out here determined to prove to us? I don't really get it, because every step that the guy has taken since he came back from that failed stint on TV has been horrible.
I don't know why he took this job. I think it's one of the dumber moves an experienced quarterback who was coveted by many has made, maybe ever made. Why would you come back to the NFL from what looked like kind of a fun and, you know, somewhat lucrative TV career? You're well-regarded. I mean, there are some who say, you know, Drew Brees, and you didn't win multiple Super Bowls? Okay. But you're well-regarded. Everyone's kissing your ass because it couldn't have just been for money. He's got money. Why didn't he just wait for one of those positions where you can step in with a real quarterback and let's go?
There's no way that he learned about who Russell Wilson is when he got to Denver, right? Sean Payton was smart enough to know what was going on with Russell Wilson long before he ever got to Denver, long before he was embarrassing him on the sidelines to try to bait Russell Wilson into reacting so that they could bench him for the last couple of games and save money. It's honestly just been kind of embarrassing to watch, right? It has made Sean Payton look small in a way that I don't think anyone thought of him as when he was in New Orleans, right? Yes, they dealt with the Bounty Gate stuff, but that largely got pinned on Greg Williams. And now you look at what else happened and you say, well, was it really about Sean Payton during the Drew Brees days, right? Now you look at it and say, Sean Payton is trying everything he can to pull like the Belichick post Brady and prove that it was really about him. And so far, not a lot to suggest it.
Well, I'm glad you made the easy segue to Belichick. So last week we played a couple of clips from Belichick doing his work with McAfee. I thought, you know, hey, he's speaking up, he's enunciating, he's projecting, so that's good. No mumbles. That's a positive. His stories were okay. They actually put it out on video. We told a Randy Moss story that was like 4 minutes that could have been 30, 45 seconds. It just went on forever, and they all fake laughed. It is our good buddy DeMond's belief that Belichick's never going back to coaching. I think he's going to do well enough on TV, and people are going to kiss his ass like Peyton, that Belichick will have something waiting for him next year. Now, I don't know if there's going to be a competition to get him, but I'll say this about Belichick. I think he is smart enough that when he goes looking for a job to really jump into, that it won't be one without a quarterback. He's got to know now, right? Then he gets to step back here and he gets to watch Sean Payton and his follies. Belichick next year, if there are opportunities, he should be very discerning about what he picks. Do not go somewhere at 115 years old. I think he's 71. Don't go somewhere without a quarterback. Because overcoming that is something that could take five freaking years like it might take Sean Payton.
Bill Belichick can still walk away right now as, if not the greatest coach in the history of the National Football League, then one of the two or three greatest coaches in the history of the league. And if he comes back and flops with a different organization,
right,
he is going to drop precipitously down that list. All of that credit is going to Brady. A lot of it's already gone to Brady, but all of that credit will go to Tom Brady if he comes back and flops. Robert Kraft, if you believe the reporting from Don Van Natta, and I do, Robert Kraft might have actually done him a favor calling Atlanta and saying, hey, Arthur Blank, don't do this. Belichick might not know when to walk away. The game might have to tell him.
Yeah. Well, the two jobs that I would be interested in if I were Belichick and they wanted me, and it's something he can, you know, deep down root against, or I guess, yeah, root for to happen, is Buffalo and the Eagles not – the Bills and the Eagles not reaching expectations, whatever they may be. I mean, I think both are – the expectation should be, even with the Bills being a bit depleted with some losses, I don't think they lost anyone they should be devastated by. Diggs is a loss. But conference finals should be the goal, and anything short of that, it should be move-on time for both organizations, and those would be spots for Belichick to move into. Now, I have no idea if the owner's there. I don't know. Jeffrey Lurie might be best pals with Bobby Kraft. I think they are, but they could be pals, and maybe the Kraft effect affects him as well. But, the Sean Payton thing is a very cautionary tale for Belichick if he is coming back.
Without question, and you left out one organization. You're going to think I'm trolling you. I am not trolling you. I actually think this makes all the sense in the world, and it would be both hilarious because of the history and perfect. Robert Saleh hung on by the skin of his teeth at the end of last year, even having lost Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers is probably going to play another couple of years. There might not be a better situation for Bill Belichick to walk into than to go back to the Jets if things don't work out this year.
No, I think you're just taking shots. I don't know why you had to do that. We're getting along well today. Things were going smoothly. I will have Robert Salas back as a Jet fan. I don't really have management back because I still don't know what they were trying to do last year. I think Salah was a victim of some blackmail, I guess. I don't know. He was a victim of their desired patience with Zach Wilson. He had no shot. None. They should have gone out and got him a quarterback. And now if he got a decent quarterback and they still flop, then some of it's Salah's fault, but I think a lot of it would be Hackett's fault. I mean, that's kind of an amazing thing in this whole mix, is that this could flop again. If can a Hackett Rodgers combination actually flop? Of course it can, right?
Sure.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Because I think he and management were to blame for last year's just joke of a season when it came to any sort of offensive production with Zach Wilson.
Well, we definitely know that it can flop. That's without question. We also know that unless you think Bryce Huff leaving alone is going to be the problem, that the Jets defense is going to be pretty damn good again, and that they've added enough pieces to this offense that with Rodgers, you have to believe that this is one of the teams that is capable of competing with the Chiefs in the AFC coming in this year. And I have a feeling Woody Johnson is looking at it that way as well from the ownership level. So I truly believe that Bill Belichick could walk into that Jets situation with the defensive talent that's there and add to his reputation. It might kill your soul, but it would add to his reputation.
Yes. Speaking of organizations that still don't have the quarterback question answered, right here, the Raiders. There are draft nicks who are asking, I think it's mostly trolling, did the Raiders blow it by not taking any quarterback in the draft?
I don't think they blew it. I mean, if you're not going to invest real capital in it, then don't do it. And I'm going to bring up one name in particular because I think this shows where the Raiders were. Let's talk Spencer Rattler again, right? Spencer Rattler could have been a day two pick. He could have been the kind of guy where you say, you know what? What's the harm? We'll take a swing and we'll see what happens. But the mark of the beast was on that dude for whatever reason you want to say that it was on that dude. Because if we're willing to put Bo Nix into the first round but not Spencer Rattler, then something there is wrong. Now, I already told you earlier, I think the Raiders should have addressed a position of more need than tight end slash weapon or whatever you want to call it. But I don't know that investing in the round two, round three, round four in a quarterback, what's the point of that? That's what you did with Aiden O'Connell, and you got to see what it looks like with Aiden O'Connell last year.
You did, and he's not the guy, and I don't think he's the future guy. So I don't know, man. The Raiders, it's our hometown team, but it's not that they're doing anything confusing. They're doing what I think you naturally move towards, and that's you dream. You try to compete. But the reality of this team going, to 10 or 11 wins is unlikely. And they're going to be in that middle ground again. Listen, we can't rewrite the end of last season. The end of last season was the disaster that put them in this position. And the disaster is they won games. When they didn't need to, and it wasn't benefiting anyone but Antonio Pierce. And I still think Pierce could have gotten the job from MD if they had, lost two more games. And then look at the draft position at that point. Now, if you don't love any of the quarterbacks that were available, if you only love the first two guys, if they were sitting at, say, the 6th, 7th, 8th pick, moving up to try to get to number 2 or number 3 to get a guy you wanted would have been a lot easier, but they kind of did themselves in with the end of last season.
Look, I told Bischoff this last week, and I only came to this idea recently, but the Raiders operate as closely as an NFL team to what you see in college football as anywhere else that you've seen, especially the fans. It's all tribal, right? Everything is about the brand. Everything is about Raider Nation and the identity. And no one bought harder into that than Antonio Pierce. And Mark Davis wants nothing more than to have the same intensity from Raider Nation around him and his team that his father did. And so you're right. Antonio Pierce could have gotten the job just with the cigars, just with the talk, just with the rah-rah stuff. They didn't have to go win games at the end of the year. But now, here's the problem. You have the purgatory situation of Antonio Pierce and everybody else in that building being able to say four words. We beat the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you delude yourself into thinking that Gardner Minshew and Brock Bowers are going to take you somewhere.
And there's no getting away from the fact that it's pretty clear this is a two-year experiment. And probably nothing will be resolved, but it's a two-year experiment. Antonio Pierce is on a shorter than normal contract for a head coach. They were going to bring in Cliff Kingsbury, but he wanted a third year. Well, we only do two-year deals. Why is that? Because the coach is on a short-term deal. You sign a quarterback to 2 years. It's a two-year experiment. And then we could be sitting here. I don't know if I'll be sitting here anymore, but radio's changing. But in 2 years, we're probably having the same conversation about a team that just went, whatever, you know, 9 wins 1 year, 8 the next. Still need a quarterback.
Complete and total swing to the other end of the pendulum from John Gruden, right?
Yep.
This is Mark Davis. Mark Davis gave John Gruden a 10-year contract. That got blown up for reasons outside his control. And now you come back with Antonio Pierce and you give him a 2-year contract after you made a longer commitment to Josh McDaniels, which was such a disaster that you didn't even get 2 full years out of it. There's only one common theme when we look at what's happened with the Raiders over this run of lack of success over the past few years, and it goes straight to the top. And it's not just a matter of saying Mark Davis does this well or doesn't do this well. Someone has to set an organizational direction that you stick with for some level of time. And that's what this team has not been able to do. They don't either say we are going truly all in, right? You make the Davante Adams trade, it looks like you're saying we are going truly all in. But then when it comes time to say, all right, you know what? Maybe that didn't work. Maybe we need to blow this thing up. I understand the idea that Mark Davis wouldn't want to say to a new stadium full of new season ticket holders, we're blowing this thing up.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been here long enough now. They've been here long enough that you can blow this thing up at this point if you want to. The Raiders are staying. The fans are staying. And everyone, after watching 6 QBs get drafted in the top 12, understands the necessity of a quarterback. And there isn't a damn person that you're fooling at this point of Gardner Minshew's career into believing that Gardner Minshew is leading you to anything more than 8 or 9 wins.
Will all 4 quarterback, rookie quarterbacks, I'm gonna throw Nixon as the 4th because Drake may be a little more of a project. Ah, you know what? I'll just stick with 3 of them. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy. Will they all have more touchdown passes and yardage than Minshew?
Let's look at it this way. I want to reframe the discussion because you know I love my analytics. Even if I just want to go with PFF score by the end of the year, right? Let's go with PFF score because especially with Jaden Daniels and to a degree with Caleb Williams, you have to add in the rushing as well to talk about how good they're going to be. And I think you're going to look at the end of the year, Caleb Williams will have a better PFF grade than Gardner Minshew. I think there's a reasonable chance that Jaden Daniels will as well.
J.J. McCarthy?
I don't think. Yeah, because look at the situation that he's in. Fantastic offensive line, the best receiver in the NFL. I don't think Drake May will. The Patriots are still a disaster. And if you want to throw Knicks in there, I think the Broncos are going to be tanking on a level that the U.S. Army would be jealous of. So I don't think he's going to be all that great either.
So then the discussion is really J.J. McCarthy versus Minshew. Because J.J. McCarthy, where he went in the draft, was within range of the Raiders. They could have made that move. Now, apparently, according to James Palmer, they were trying to trade up to 8. Now, I don't know who they were, if they were trying to take Penix over McCarthy, but McCarthy is the guy you're going to watch now. And, you know, I sent you a bunch of numbers, over-under numbers, from some offshore openers. McCarthy's over-under on touchdown passes with the Vikings his first year is 20.5. His yards are 31.5, 3,100. And his interceptions are only 12.5. I think that's kind of low. That's why I was kind of looking at these numbers and saying, can Minshew do that? Is Minshew going to be a higher rated quarterback than J.J. McCarthy, who the Raiders could have had?
No, he's not. And I don't have to go very far to be able to prove the point that I'm trying to make here. In fact, I only have to go to last year's statistics to talk about who Gardner Minshew was, and let's talk about what Gardner Minshew was surrounded by, right? Gardner Minshew was surrounded by a reasonably good offensive cast last year, right? The Indianapolis offensive line bounced back from as bad as it had been the previous year. Michael Pittman is a reasonable number one receiver. He's not on the level of Devontae Adams, but a reasonable number one receiver. And you had Zach Moss step up and become a number one type running back for the Indianapolis Colts before you got Jonathan Taylor back at the end of the year. And what did you end up with? Among qualifying quarterbacks, Gardner Minshew was 33rd out of 41 in PFF grade. Here are the guys he was surrounded by. Here are the five above him. Oh, Jimmy Garoppolo. I remember him. Aiden O'Connell, Tommy DeVito, Easton Stick, and Will Levis. The five below him, Josh Dobbs, Sam Howell, Zach Wilson, Daniel Jones, and Desmond Ridder.
Yikes.
We know who you are, and you just got 2 years from the Las Vegas Raiders for what? What is it that we think Gardner Minshew is going to show us at this point of his career? He's 28 years old. He is who he is, and the idea that you brought in Gardner Minshew without a firm plan to get a young quarterback to play alongside him is, it should be maddening for Raiders fans. I don't know if it is.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Put your hand in there, dude.
Good show today, Candy. Very good. You know, that discussion just got me thinking. We were talking about J.J. McCarthy going at 10 to the Vikings. So clearly the Raiders decided that they didn't like McCarthy enough to trade, which would have amounted to basically nothing. The Jets got a fourth and a fifth, which I guess is not nothing, but a fourth and a fifth to swap spots. Raiders would have to pay what, I guess, according to the card, slightly more, which is nothing. So the Raiders decided, hey, McCarthy, we don't want him. Why do the Giants do the same thing? Why do the Giants say, you know what, J.J. McCarthy, don't like him?
Well, Giants made a mistake a couple of years ago in paying Daniel Jones, and they're being realistic about what their investment is, right? They are in for a $46 million cap number on Daniel Jones this year.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
He's fired up to move on. He's ready. No, keep going. Keep going. Keep going.
I didn't know. Wow.
That's it.
You know what?
We're going quick. We're going quick. Make your point.
That had like a Showtime at the Apollo feel. Like, I got the hook.
He's
the
like,
Sandman came out for me. Your take sucks. Move on.
Let's go.
Let's go. Giants, I would have absolutely gone up the wall if the Giants had made a move for J.J. McCarthy.
Oh, wow.
Take a guy like Malik Nabers, who a lot of folks in the draft space said consensus top two guy in terms of overall athlete
right. In
this draft. Just take him. Daniel Jones got you the divisional round a couple of years ago, in part because of his legs, in part because Brian Daboll schemed around him. I'm not saying I think he's going to be that guy necessarily again, but you have to at least be honest about the mistake you already made by paying him last year and say, if we're going to get out of it, we get out of it next year without having to take the same cap hit.
We have a minute left. You're back on Wednesday. I want you to do this for some homework. I know this is your most important job. Would you have felt better coming in today if the Raiders had taken J.J. McCarthy instead of Brock Bowers? Can you answer that quickly, or do you need the day and a half to think about it?
Oh, but that's a tease. We want listeners to come back in 48 hours, don't they?
Because I spent the break. I was like, you know, maybe I'd have a whole different attitude. But it was also, it'd be a massive flip-flop for me because I don't think J.J. McCarthy, I almost said Mike McCarthy. I don't think J.J. McCarthy is going to be a great quarterback in the NFL, but there's something about being in the mix with that young quarterback. Gets us all excited. That's it. Candy's giving me the silent treatment. The mic is down. He's going to think about it. I will forget about that Monday tease and never get to it this Wednesday, so something to look forward to. Have a great evening, everybody.